Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. 310 Division Street is back in the news. There was a delegation before Cobourg Town Council recently seeking clarification regarding changes to the emergency care establishment bylaw over language related to licensing. Council was seeking to limit the number of establishments to 2. The Transition House Board has concerns due to the organizational structure between the shelter and Northumberland County, the building owners. Despite the pleas, Council passed the bylaw changes. Then there was the Northumberland County Social Services Committee meeting earlier this month, where public concerns were raised regarding the shelter and its operation. All this comes on the heels of a motion passed by Cobourg Council to hold a public town hall before June 5th to hear more feedback about the operation from businesses and residents nearby. In this interview, you will hear Transition House Executive Director Ike Nwibe respond to all these issues and more. The entire show is dedicated to his answers to key questions. He will talk about the last 6 months, sharing statistics, successes, and challenges. Have a listen and see if you are satisfied with the answers. Here is the first part of the interview. I'm so glad to welcome back Ike Nwibe, Executive Director of Transition House. Good to see you again on Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Robert. Thanks for having me.
It is nearly 6 months since Transition House moved into its new building. How would you characterize these first months?
Thank you, Robert. That's a very good start. It's been wonderful. I would say, you know, that there's been a lot of ups and downs. We've had a lot of, good success stories, a lot of challenges, a lot of learning, a lot of unlearning to do and all that. But it's been worth the while. That's something. Looking back, would we rather do it, be where we were before? I would say that absolutely not. What we have now is way better than what we used to have. Each time we remind ourselves of where we have come from and then how the service users perceive or how they are now being served as compared to how it used to be. So it's a wonderful opportunity to operate out of 310 Division.
How would you say your clients look at the services you offer now? Can you give us some examples and some insight into that?
Right. So we came from a place where we didn't have the opportunity for couples to be able to access services together. We didn't have that opportunity to be able to support individuals who own pets. We didn't have that opportunity to support persons who identify as LGBTQ plus. But for now, all that is things of the past. We are now able to support persons who have accessibility needs, couples, persons who own pets, and and so on and so forth. So we're not saying that we are 100% there yet, but we keep on pushing, and then exploring more possibilities and all that. So it's totally different from where we have come from.
How many people have you helped overall from all the programs you offer and all the services you offer? Can you give us some idea of just in total numbers, how many people have been helped by the new Transition House?
Right. So in terms of the unique clients, we've supported at least 160 unique clients. And then this is both the emergency shelter, the the hub, and then the transitional housing. We just opened the transitional housing less than 2 weeks now, that is supporting individuals in need of transitional housing services. And so altogether, it's an average or a minimum of 460.
At one point, you were announcing highlights to the public. This included the number of people who obtained housing and alternative housing plus treatment. What are your most recent statistics?
So since opening, at least about 12 people have moved into permanent and appropriate housing. And we've had about 15 partners who actively support the work we do at the site, who by that I mean they come on site a number of times a week to support our mutual clients. It's cut across mental health support services, substance use, ID and income support, employment support services, programming generally to help folks develop life skills and all that. So all this has been, of course, I should mention as well, legal assistance in terms of helping folks understand, the legal framework, the legal space, and especially those who are involved with the justice system, and as well, food security, and so on and so forth. All these are some of the activities that have been happening in the space. We have partners who come on site because we get support, for instance, from the food banks, because you can't rule out food insecurity when you're dealing with homelessness or poverty and all that. So we have partners who have come on board to be able to complement the efforts that we are, the support we're able to get from the food banks, and they get on board, join in serving the food, interact with the clients, and then also develop their own relationship. And, these are some of the changes we've seen, and more partners keep coming on board to want to find out how can they be part of what we're doing, how, in what ways can they help.
Are you helping more people now than you were helping before?
Definitely. First off, looking at it from the aspect of the number of people in the first place, we've never had this number of unique clients. We've never had that. But because the doors are now open to, we have more rooms to be able to accommodate people. For instance, we moved from a facility that could only support up to 22 individuals, which due to the ECE bylaw had to be reduced to 10. And then we moved into a facility that could now support 35 individuals in the shelter, and then up to 20 persons in the warming and cooling hub, and up to 10 persons in the transitional housing. So with that alone means that we now have the capacity to be able to support more persons. We came from a place where we didn't have room for programming. We didn't have room in terms of if like a partner were to come on site and then they need some kind of privacy to be able to work with their clients. We didn't have that back then. But now we have that space to be able to do programming. We have space to be able to do confidential, like connections with clients. We also have the ability to hold case conferencing. We have the equipment for that on site. We have the ICT equipment also on site for clients who need to use internet services. They need to do apartment search. They need to do job search, or even attend online schools or anything of that nature. We have all that in place currently, which were not possible previously.
In the most recent report that was given to Northumberland County, there was a report that said that there were 195 unique visits for from November to April. Where do most of these people come from?
So the majority of them, I would say, are from the area. We have, as per our protocol, and then by that I mean Northumberland County.
Okay, before you get too far into it, do you have a specific number? Can we talk in specific numbers rather than in generalities, please?
So I would say that 40 to 45% are from the immediate area. By that I mean Hoboken. And then the others, I would say another 40 to 45% from the immediate, other towns within the county. And then the remaining would be from like other communities, you know, of which our protocol is that whenever persons show up, when they have come from other communities that don't, because for anyone to be able to qualify to benefit from our services, they have to be from within the Northumberland County. So if we identify anyone who is coming from outside of the Northumberland County, of course, our approach is to first of all cater to the safety of that individual. For instance, somebody comes in at about, say, late in the night, and then they're in need of shelter or anything. We would first take them in, ensure that they're safe, and then by morning would, get them on their way to where they actually should be accessing services based on the location where they have come from. So yes, so that's the thing. Like, we have quite a number of people. They have lived in the area. So many people were born in the area, but for one reason or the other, they have lost their house and they've lost their jobs. And then this is the community they've always known. Some of them have to keep on staying connected to where they have a support system. The support system in this case could be, you know, friends, family, other family members, or even the various community partners that have been supporting them since they've been on their path to begin getting back on their feet. So these are some of the reasons why we have seen individuals choosing to remain within the place where they get the most, help.
There are many in our community who are pushing to see the decentralization of services similar to yours across the county. What's your reaction to that plan?
Right. So I would say it's a good call, because if we have services closer to people, it's a good way to go. However, it's important that we look at things in general, and not just from the standpoint of, most times people only look at the mental health and substance use component of homelessness and how that affects the community and things in the community, and then we say, we'd rather this is removed or maybe spread across different locations. Yes, while you may have addressed that issue of individual spreading the numbers across, how about addressing the reason why individuals are like in a particular location? For instance, the services that those individuals require, most of those services as we have it today, they're concentrated around, not far from where our services, our facility is located. So apart from the fact that, yes, people are coming to transition house or treatment division or anything, one of the reasons why they choose to stay in transition house is also because of proximity to services such as what I've, listed earlier. In addition to that, you have the, Ontario Works, which most of the clients are on. And then you have ODSP. You have, the outreach, various outreach services and all that. Do we want to also ensure that all these services are made available in those locations? In a way, how we are looking at doing that, for instance, is that we've been able to secure some kind of support where we're looking to procure an accessible vehicle that can help us, that is geared towards us actually making services available to individuals in their various communities, so that they're not looking at coming to pretend division or transition house as the only solution to their problem. Our priority has always been in supporting individuals where they're at. And then before, if an individual reaches out to us, for instance, and say in, they're asking to get shelter services, we first of all look at why is this the next thing? You know, why is it the next option? We ask questions like, what is, you know, what's going on? Where were you last night? Where have you been last 6 to 12 months? Things like that to help us understand the situation. If it is a case of maybe it's food insecurity, or we look at how can we bridge the gap. If it's a case of, or they're behind on their rent, or they need some kind of support with that, we look at addressing that instead of identifying shelter as the only way forward. Where that is now, where all these options don't work, and then it becomes evident that they have to be in shelter, then, you know, we'll proceed with the admission process. So with the procurement of a vehicle, for instance, it makes it possible for the outreach team to be able to easily, you know, meet this person's where they're at, save them where they're at, and all that. And then that's how Transition House is looking at, this is what we can contribute to further elevate the concerns of the community, you know, over the next few months.
Speaking of concerns, in your report to the county, you track people registering concerns or complaints. Can you tell us how many you receive per day?
It depends. And then this are tracked from different components. For instance, we have what goes directly to the security, and then we track what comes directly to Transition House. But in my own, from my own perspective, I would say there are days that go without one, you know, one complaint. While there are other days, maybe one, or, and then some other days it might go probably more than that. But the complaints are usually around, oh, there is this, somebody has dropped this garbage around here. Can you make an arrangement to come and remove it? Or there are some people who are congregating around here. They shouldn't be here, that kind of thing. And then would make an arrangement for the security team who get there, like in a number of minutes, to move individuals on. And, you know, other things around maybe like probably noise or things of that nature. So this is it. What I can say anyway is that we have moved from a place where it was pretty high when we started, and then, you know, it started to drop because of the measures that were made. For instance, constant reminder to our clients. On a weekly basis, we have the residents meeting where we remind clients of the fact that they are members of the community. And then they also play a role in ensuring that there is, you know, decency, there is respect for everybody. The same way we want respect from others, we need to also give the same. And all that, we do those constant reminders to our clients. And then if anything is brought to our attention, you know, we try to identify the individuals who are concerned, and then also look at how can we further support them in ensuring that is not something that continues. But another thing that is important to note is that there are so many activities that happen, or so many individuals who engage in certain behaviors that are always classified as related to 310 or Transition House. And those individuals may not necessarily be clients or service users at 310. So, but because as per the ECE bylaw, because these things are happening within the 500 meter radius of the facility, by default, most people would say that, yes, that is something that is related to 310. And then I have to send my complaint to 310 division. So yes, these complaints come and all that. It's at that level where we're able to now, you know, redirect folks and say, okay, this one here should be going to the police. This one here, okay, we'll send somebody out immediately. Or this one, no, it's not related to ECE bylaw. It's a lot of, you know, disaggregation that happens there.
Well, according to the report that was given at the Social Services Committee, there have been 190 complaints or concerns documented as of April 26th. That seems like a lot. And also there's charts that show, you know, the hours in which calls come in, and they seem to come in almost around the clock. Now that you're being able to redirect it, that's one thing. But what about just the fact that there are so many concerns and so many complaints?
Yeah, no doubt. Like when any, if you bring together that number of people in a, you know, to a place, it's one would expect that it's almost impossible to expect that there's not going to be any kind of complaint or any kind of concern or whatever. But what we also consider as a success is, okay, when this complaints come, how fast are we able to respond to those complaints? And then how fast are we able to address those concerns and all that?
Well, do you track that?
Well, yes. I believe, the last time it was in about 3 minutes thereabout, as per the report from the, like I said before, it's not just Transition House. There is the security component to it. There is also the counting component, the outreach team, and all this is put together and all that. So an average of three minutes thereabout, the last time, I checked.
How often are you inspected by officials?
There is no particular, we have seen a report to Transition House, but it's been said that there has been 116 inspections, but I'm kind of, you know, lost, because when there is an inspection, I am the one who is in charge at that facility. And apparently there are inspections that happen without me knowing about it. So it is, it looks like when the bylaw, for instance, drives past 310 division, maybe they take a picture of something that is happening, that is probably considered an inspection or something like that. But since we opened, there's been one, well-organized inspection, because we were notified. And then we prepared ourselves, we confirmed our availability, and then they came, we clarified our protocol and all that. But in addition to this, there was an other inspection that I believe it was sometime in April, when there was an inspection. It was at between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. You know, when the bylaw and the fire department showed up and all that. That's something we didn't know about. Something they showed up, and then according to them, that is part of their protocol and all that. So, but so far, these are about the two inspections that I know of. So, but it's hard to be able to tell how often we're supposed to be inspected or that we are inspected.
How do you feel about the fact that there are these inspections that are taking place where you're not notified or you're not there?
Yes, I think it's a little bit concerning, in the sense that at the point you now wonder what the intent really is, if it is get towards improving processes, or like we have heard from different times, that it is all about residents' safety and all that. If it is about residents' safety, for instance, like somebody who somebody has the right to be able to rest at say 3 a.m. You know, like while that is my own workspace, it is somebody's living space and all that. So if we're going to have, if there is an incident, I can understand that. Like there is an incident that requires for serious intervention, that totally I get. But if it is a random, I think better planning should be able to go into that, so that we are respectful of persons. We can't show up at somebody's, you know, home, for instance, somebody who is housed in their own private residence, and say that at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. and say we're doing an inspection and all that. But this is how we view this. This is okay, because it is homeless individuals that we're talking about. More like they don't have a voice. It's okay. Certain things can be done to them. Nobody's going to speak for them or something like that. I think certain things should be done properly, and then respecting everybody who is involved, regardless of their housing status.
You feel the town is treating you reasonably?
I wouldn't be able to give a yes or a no answer. But I would just say that I have concerns. As the executive director of Transition House, I have concerns, and I do not think that in accordance with the rhetoric that we have heard, this is geared towards resident safety or anything like that. Sometimes I get to question that, like if certain actions are actually about residents, safety. Because it looks like it can never get its rights the way it is. Because certain requests are made, we want you to start doing this going forward as per the ECE regulation. We start doing that. And then a few hours, a few days after that, they push the bar again. So it's at the point, it looks like, what exactly are we get towards? I keep saying to our partners and, the staff members that I've not actually, since this is my 18th, I've been around for 18 months in the role, I do not feel that I've been able to really settle to do the job that I'm employed to do. Because each time it looks like we are constantly putting out fires. We are constantly putting out fires, and then responding to issues that, that can actually be addressed without necessarily causing any kind of disruption to our operations. The recent one, for instance, is the fact that we've had to remove the recliner chairs from the warming hub and then replace those with regular plastic chairs. And then, we've had to reduce our occupancy to be able to align with, ECE regulation. And all that. Each time we comply with everything that's been asked of us. Each time, for instance, we were given a fine because when there was an inspection, the one of the three, between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., 10 out of 13 persons, according to the report, 10 out of 13 persons were seen to be sleeping in the space. And then that is considered a contravention of the bylaw. Now, in my home, for instance, my bedroom is where I sleep when I want to sleep at night. But if I might be watching TV in the living room and in the doze off, it doesn't necessarily make that a sleeping space. But does it happen? Yes, it happens. And then in the case of homeless persons who might be experiencing, who in some cases maybe use substances, or they live rough, they've moved around, they do what we cannot expect, that there will be no time when they would, doze off or something like that. And this is at 3 a.m. and all that. But the good thing anyway is that we have, a process is currently ongoing for us to review the fire safety plan, so that certain language there can be changed. And in respecting some of this, the actual, situation, the reflecting what would most likely be expected or can be seen in a facility of that nature. It's not a facility, anyhow facility, but the kind that supports persons experiencing homelessness. So it's almost impossible for us to expect that they are not going to doze off in the space. They're not going to, sleep off. Or something like that. So, but I'm glad that there's been some kind of a shift on the part of the fire department. I'm thankful for their understanding and their willingness to work with us to review the fire safety plan, and then so that we can return to normal operations.
That was the first part of the interview with Ike Nwibe, Executive Director of Transition House. Coming up, Nwibe talks about the recent delegation by board members to Coburg Council and whether or not Transition House can exist harmoniously with the community. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.